The talk tonight I'm calling Loving Goodness, or one could call it an ode to goodness. Perhaps some of you have already seen, as I did just a few nights ago, the new movie about Mr. Rogers. Anybody see it yet? It's, what is it? Won't You Be My Neighbor? It's good. It brought me back to a time when my son Adam, who's now 31, when he was, you know, four or five or six around then, I used to watch Mr. Rogers with him all the time. It was my favorite time of the day. Not just because he was happy, I was delighted just seeing that guy. And the movie, it's so uplifting. You walk out just saying, wow, there is real good in this world. And the neat thing about him, you know, he was a minister. He was an ordained Presbyterian minister, I think it was. And this was his ministry. He just kind of fell into it. And they interview a lot of the people who worked with him, and they say, was he really that good? And they all say, yeah, that's who he was. Mm-hmm. Anybody watch Mr. Rogers? I'm curious. Oh, good. And if you don't, if you're not either from this country or grew up watching it, in the age, he did everything that would guarantee a flop on TV. No sound bites, no flash, no nothing to really capture your eye. Very slow, and it worked because of who he was. Now, I'm not going to have the whole talk about Mr. Rogers. That just kind of stimulated in me. But what it did drive home again, which I have, you know, been aware of for many years, is there's something in us that just loves goodness. And I think of it as really a central aspect of the spiritual life. Not for everyone. Some people are drawn, say, to Buddha Dharma because they want to see clearly into things and awaken the mind and see deeply into impermanence and unsatisfactoriness and selflessness and have freedom that comes from that. But most of us, really it's that we are drawn in some way. We hear a call of something inside of us that we can't ignore that calls us to goodness. That's a word I'm using now, and there might be a few words that I interchange that with. But there's something not only that calls us, but that uplifts us when we are around it. It's contagious. Goodness is contagious. And there are some people who I just think of them, and my heart opens. Pete Seeger. I just have to think about Pete Seeger. And there's something that is uplifted and moved. that you probably get your own list. In fact, I'm curious, who brings out or reminds you of goodness? Nelson Mandela. Excellent. Great. I'm going to be quoting him in a little while. Nelson Mandela, what an inspiring character. Who else? What's that? Joanna Macy. Mm-hmm. Real. Who is it? Martin Luther King. Yeah. Who else? It doesn't have to be a great spiritual leader. You know, I mean, of course, there's the Dalai Lama as well. But maybe someone, Michelle Obama. She does it for me, definitely. Yeah. Anyone else? Yes. Your acupuncturist, Mary Stewart. Okay, lovely. Huh? Uh-huh. So we all have people that just remind us of the good inside. They inspire us. Just think of the word inspiration. I'm trying to put this in the right words. We might catch an idea. There are some less than good ideas and some less than good people who have an effect, and they can be contagious as well, with even though they're, you know, mean-spirited or angry or aggressive, and they're heroes to some. But as far as inspiration, something that opens our heart, by definition, I think, it has to do with a quality of the good inside. Mm-hmm. And as I'm talking about this, I'm not hopefully just going to be seeming syrupy and sappy and politically correct, but goodness can also have tremendous courage and fierceness and standing up in the face of unpopularity, of course, like Martin Luther King or Gandhi, you know, or Jesus. You know, you can pay for your goodness because it can trigger a place in others that can't quite hear that call, and activate the opposite response. But I think for most of us, when the mind isn't confused and isn't contracted, there is something in us that loves the good. Goodness feels good, by definition, and we're wired up that way. And there's this study, when the mind is not confused and put in an adult in an fMRI machine, and they're not, their body isn't physically in discomfort, or their mind or their heart is not troubled, they naturally exhibit, the mind is, the brain exhibits its conscious, calm, creative, content, and caring. Those are the parts of our brain that light up when we're not caught in contraction or aversion or fear. And there's a study I came across with toddlers, a simple, cleverly devised study. They had these toddlers, and I think they were, maybe 3 or 4 or so. And an adult was hanging some would be hanging some wash with clothespins, and they appeared to drop a clothespin, and they had their hands up on the line, and this is not the toddler and their mother. This is with people they didn't know, but they felt comfortable enough, as I recall the study. And the adult is looking down at the clothespin, and it's near the toddler. And almost all the toddlers would go and pick up the clothespin and bring it to the adult. Not because they're hoping to get strokes. Oh, you're such a wonderful little boy or girl. Just, oh, here. Isn't that neat? Isn't that nice to know? In Buddhist teachings, there are different states, different mind states. Some are called wholesome, kusala, and some are called unwholesome, akusala. The akusala, unwholesome states, they're called unwholesome or unhealthy because they're states of suffering. I've mentioned this before when I've talked about awakening joy. They're states of contraction and suffering that lead to more suffering. States like jealousy, envy, fear, aversion, anger, wanting, states of confusion. All of those states, the mind gets tight, generally spins stories that are not uplifting stories. The heart gets tight, and we are suffering. The wholesome states, kusala, states like compassion, generosity, kindness, patience, joy, ease, peace, they are all they're called wholesome or healthy states. Just even the word wholesome, you know, has some connotations in there. They're wholesome and healthy because they feel good in the moment and they lead to further happiness as they're cultivated. And the Buddha said, the idea in wise effort is to minimize the unwholesome states and maximize the wholesome states. Both because they don't feel good, the unwholesome, and because they will continue to lead us down a path of more suffering. And the wholesome states feel good, lead to more happiness, and actually ultimately, for the purposes of what the Buddha was speaking, they create the conditions for awakening to arise. Not just, oh, this will feel good, but he said, as it sometimes would be said, the Buddha taught because he wanted people to experience the sure heart's release, a heart that's free of greed, hatred, and delusion. And he said the way to do that is to create these wholesome states that out of that sense of connection to the good, the heart becomes at ease and rests, and from that there is the possibility of awakening. Like the seven factors of awakening or seven factors of enlightenment include mindfulness, investigation, curiosity, energy to practice, joy, calm, concentration, and equanimity. So those are all states of well-being that, when coming into balance, create the awakening experience. the Brahmaviharas, you know, those the states of heart. If you go to Spirit Rock, you see the dormitories are marked metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. Metta, loving kindness, karuna, compassion, mudita, sympathetic joy in the happiness of others, and upekkha, equanimity. Those states, the Brahmaviharas, is also called Brahmavihara, means a divine abode, the realm of the gods. Those states are all natural byproducts of a mind that is clear and a mind that is concentrated. So you don't even, you can cultivate them consciously, but they naturally arise when the mind is not caught in confusion. There's a natural kind of movement when somebody falls. We say, oh, are you okay? It's just how most of us, not all of us, are wired up. And on a karmic level, it's said that when you act from an unwholesome state, you are creating suffering in the moment, in your own mind and heart, in the energy that comes back to you from whoever is on the receiving end. You know, they don't say, oh, thank you so much for your feedback. It's like, whoa. Okay. In the recollection of that unskillful action and the practicing of that habit, you are more likely to do it. So when you act out of greed, hatred, and delusion, the source of all suffering, you are planting seeds of suffering in the future. And when you act from a place of goodness, of non-greed, of generosity, of non-hatred, of kindness, and non-delusion or clarity or wisdom, those are the three roots of happiness, non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion, all having to do with goodness. When you act from that motivation, it feels good in the moment. It feels good in the energy that comes back to you from who's ever on the receiving end. It feels good as you recall it. And it feels more likely that you will practice it because you've just practiced that habit. Mm-hmm. So this place of well-being and goodness, it's who we are when we're not confused. And now, obviously, this is not a Pollyanna world, there's also a lot of fear and anger and mean-spiritedness and hatred. All of those things, we have the capacity for those things as well, as we all know so well. All you have to do is pick up the newspapers or look at your phone. How much ill will and confusion and hatred there is in this world. Somebody asked, it's an old line, Ramakrishna, the great Indian saint and sage, saying, Master, why is there so much evil in the world? And his response was, to thicken the plot. It does make it a little bit more interesting, doesn't it? We are not living in the heaven realm. We're living in this realm where we're trying to sort out all of those things inside that can go either way. We all have the Dalai Lama inside of us and whoever you want to name on the other side in your own mind. It's in all of us. And so we have the capacity to go either way. But the way it seems to naturally occur is unless we're wounded at a very early age, that goodness, those toddlers getting those clothespins are naturally who we are. That we have to be taught. We have to be taught to be mean-spirited and hating. It was interesting in the movie, the Mr. Rogers movie, when he died. He died in I forget when it was, 2003 or so. When he died, and there was a big, you know, funeral and memorial service and all. There were people across the street from where it was all taking place with placards saying, Mr. Rogers will go to hell, because he was accepting and embracing of gays. And what really was so sad were there were not only adults, but their children with those placards. And it was mentioned in the movie, oh my goodness, look what people can teach. They can teach anything out of their own confusion. Here's this passage from Nelson Mandela, who says, I never lost hope that this great transformation, that is the end of apartheid in South Africa, would occur, not only because of the great heroes, but because of the courage of the ordinary men and women in my country. I always knew that deep down in every human heart, there is mercy and generosity. No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. Even in the grimmest times in prison, when my comrades and I were pushed to our limits, I would see a glimmer of humanity in one of the guards, perhaps for just a second, but it was enough to reassure me and keep me going. Man's goodness is a flame that can be hidden but never extinguished. This is Lewis Thomas, who wrote the great classic book, Lives of the Cell. He was a biologist, and that wonderful book came out in the 1970s. He says, I maintain, despite the moment's evidence against the claim, that we are born and grow up with a fondness for each other. And we have genes for that. We can be talked out of it, for the genetic message is like a distant music, and some of us are hard of hearing. Societies are noisy affairs, drowning out the sound of ourselves and our connection. And hard of hearing, we go to war. Stone deaf, we make nuclear missiles. Nonetheless, the music is there, waiting for more listeners. So this is something to keep in mind, that the practice one could think of, I would say, is just getting more and more in touch with the goodness inside of us and expressing it and helping awaken it in the goodness of others. Because there's something about actually looking for it that both is a gift to the one looking and the gift to the one receiving. It becomes a very wonderful way to go through life. I've mentioned this here in the past. For me, one of the real inspiring teachings of Neem Karoli Baba, who was a great influence and inspiration for me, the guru from Ram Dass's books, Be Here Now, Maharaji, and he would say, the best form to worship God is every form. And when I first heard that, I took it as an instruction to just keep looking for the good in others around. And that became a main practice of mine. And I was a school teacher for a number of years in New York City, mostly fifth grade and sixth grade. And my task at the beginning of each semester of each year was to tune in to the beautiful being inside every child. Some kids, you had to wear shades because they were just kind of dazzling and radiant and just shining. Other kids were less so because maybe they learned a different way to get attention, or they had experienced abuse or neglect, and so they didn't know about letting their natural goodness shine through. But that was my little game that I set up for myself. And almost I knew that every kid wanted to be accepted and approved and valued. And in quieter moments, often it would be in quieter moments, not in the big class, but more often one-to-one, at some point, if they felt I could see them and see the goodness inside, I had a better chance of bringing it out. And that's how we are. When we are seen, when we feel that somebody believes in us, that's what a benefactor or a mentor often is. Somebody who believes in you or who inspires you, or a friend who just sees and delights in who you are, it does something to you. It actually draws it out of you. And just like when somebody is looking and they're seeing all the things wrong with you, and you sense that that's what they're doing. They're just sizing you up and down and judging you. How does that feel? Awful, doesn't it? You can sense it. And when you see somebody is just looking for your how good you are, or your beauty, or your kindness, or something lovely about you, it brings it out. It helps you shine. When I'm seeing people on retreat and they come in for interviews or practice discussions, and they might be having a really hard time and having a meltdown, my practice still is to just tune into the Buddha in them. And the more it can be seen, the more it can be experienced on the inside. Mm. So I really encourage that as a practice for all of us, not to be naive, not to think that everybody is there with a smile and love. Sometimes you've got to be really mindful and careful about the context that you're in, be careful around people who can either be confused or dangerous or mean-spirited or just like to have an argument, and know how to protect yourself. But still, if you can, look for the good in there. And when you are around those who are harmless or benign, to just give them the benefit of the doubt and see that beautiful being in there. This is a line I love from Mark Twain. He says, keep away from people who try to belittle your ambitions. The really great people make you feel that you too can become great. Isn't that beautiful? For me, no matter how impressive somebody is or how powerful they seem, if you feel smaller around them, it's not really that impressive. You might be in awe of their personal power, but the people who really inspire are the ones that inspire you to be good and to develop yourself, or who make you feel you're okay. Oh, I'm okay. This is from a passage that some of you are familiar with. Read it on retreats and have read it here before. Maybe I've read it here recently, I'm not sure. In the Babemba tribe of Africa, when a person acts irresponsibly or unjustly, they are placed in the center of the village, alone and unfettered. All work ceases, and every man, woman, and child in the village gathers in a large circle around the accused individual. Then each person in the tribe speaks to the accused one at a time, each recalling the good things the person in the center of the circle has done in their lifetime. Every incident, every experience that can be recalled with any detail and accuracy is recounted. All of their positive attributes, good deeds, strengths, and kindnesses are recited carefully and at length. This tribal ceremony often lasts for several days. At the end, the tribal circle is broken, a joyous celebration takes place, and the person is symbolically and literally welcomed back into the tribe. That's the kind of tribe you want to hang out with. Okay? Doesn't it make sense? If we're being constantly told how bad we are, that becomes the way we think of ourselves. But if we have forgotten and can be reminded of the good inside, that just helps awaken it. So this becomes a kind of practice that we can do, seeing our own goodness and well-being and helping awaken it in others. A friend was just telling me a story this week. Let's see if I can find it. Yeah, she's a Dharma teacher in Durango, she was leading a class series on the Bodhisattva ideal about how your own practice can be an offering for others, and that when you express your caring, that's really the as powerful an aspect of the practice as your own enlightenment. And somebody in the class told her later, and the class had, I think, something like 40 people or so in it, and they said, you know, there are some people here that are just getting by, and they're really having a hard time. And it was very moving to my friend, who then the next class said that there are some people here, just as a bodhisattva practice, there are some people here who have very fortunate circumstances, and there are some people here who I've heard are having, there's a handful of people here that have a hard time getting by. And I have a challenge for you to be really generous, and those who can give something to support those who can't. And she said, and I'm not just talking about like a $5 or $10 bill thrown in. I'm talking about really stretch yourself. And then she said something like, you know, there's some people here might be able to write a $5,000 check. And there were some chuckles, like, mm. And she said, I'm not kidding. And afterwards she thought, oh my goodness, what did that come from? I can't believe that came out of my mouth. But she was just really connected to a place of deep caring, saying, let's come together. And they raised $8,000. One person did write a $5,000 check. And six people, as it turned out, that the community didn't know who, but she was, she dispersed it to those people who said, oh my goodness, I didn't know how I was going to get by this next week. And when she told me that story, I got so moved and happy how the power of her conviction in saying, let's do this. Show how you care. Was able to awaken that in others. And then just hearing the story, I got really happy. And everybody in there, her class, was happy. It's like we want to share, and we want to give our caring. There's a line I love from Shanti Deva, who wrote the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. He says, the miracle of awakening lifts us above poverty into the wealth of giving to life. Lifts us above poverty, that small, what's in it for me, mind, into the wealth of giving to life. And as I've mentioned before, Martin Seligman, the father of positive psychology, said, he wrote this book, Authentic Happiness. He said, the greatest source of happiness that he's found is finding your own gifts that life has given you and being able to express them to others in a spirit of contribution. That's the greatest source of happiness. And when you think about it, there's nothing in it for you other than just letting your caring and your goodness shine. The Dalai Lama has this expression, selfish altruism. And he says it's a good thing, that good feeling, just hearing Mr. Rogers, oh, there's a good feeling. That good feeling that comes from expressing your care. That's where the real happiness is. So I would just say, as you practice, make it a central aspect of your practice, the basic loving kindness meditation, to tune in to the goodness inside. Ram Dass has a basic instruction these days where this is his basic practice to himself that he recommends to others, if you can relate to it, where he says over and over, I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness. And that's who you are when your mind isn't getting caught and small or in the way. That's who you are. So I just invite you for a moment. We'll end this and open to a conversation in a few moments. Just for a few moments to reflect on what you sense are your beautiful qualities or good qualities that you've been given in this lifetime. And if you have a hard time sensing it, what do you think your friends see? What shines through you when you're not lost in fear or confusion or judgment? You might reflect on a random act of kindness that you've done somewhere in recent times or in your past where you were just there for someone else because it just felt good. Just tuning into that measure of good heart that you've been given. And delight in it. And appreciate it. And know that the more you can access it, and the more you can express it, the more you create the conditions for genuine happiness and well-being. And so you might have that in mind as a central aspect of your Dharma practice. Just let the good inside shine through. Okay, so we have some time for either questions, comments about the theme, anything that arises, and if not, there are questions about practice, we can do that too. But let's see if anything comes up from that. So, Andrew is, as usual, willing to go around.
James,
TJ, you had spoken about how
you know, people show their goodness and show their badness, and both get a lot of admirers. And you can, in pop culture, movies and songs, video, music videos, you can, movies and music videos, pop music.
Yeah.
There's plenty of people doing that, showing that, and you find them having admirers.
Yeah.
But some 20 years ago, I read somebody who kept the statistics that the most admired movie character in all of American film history is Atticus Finch.
Atticus Finch, from To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very inspiring, just how popular goodness is. And every time I have some doubts about society or the state of things, I go back to that fact, and it feels really good to know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we love to be inspired by heroes. That's what heroes are. You know, they inspire us. There's this notion of the elevation response. I think Jonathan Haidt coined it, where when you see somebody doing something noble, it not only uplifts you, but it makes you want to go out and do something noble as well. The elevation response. Isn't it amazing how we can be inspired to do more than we think we could? But oh, look at what they're doing! Yeah. Anything else in the back, Larry?
Awesome.
Oh. Oh yes. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Laura.
Hi, Laura.
What would you say about when you try to see goodness in somebody who has a hard time seeing goodness in themselves, and you reach a point where you feel really drained because you're giving so much of your energy trying to help them see, and then feeling the guilt kind of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. As it doesn't work with everyone. The one of the names I love of the Buddha, one of his monikers is, he was called the teacher of those who could be taught. That's the Buddha. He couldn't reach everybody. Some people said, oh, what's the big deal? Or they wanted to discredit him, you know, or look at Jesus too. And the Dalai Lama has some good advice. He says, if you're around some really negative energy and you've done what you can to help make it a better situation, and you're just getting drained and exhausted, it's the time to find the nearest exit. That you just can't, not everybody is able to hear it. You know, like that Lewis Thomas said, you know, there's distant voices with so much static around. So you do what you can, but you can't really proselytize or say, oh, if you only saw and they're not able to see it. It doesn't work that way, because if somebody's antenna aren't out, then the static will keep it from getting in. And so that's where the equanimity practice comes in, where there's caring, but there's saying, I honor your journey, and it's not up to me to rescue or fix. Yeah. So, Larry? Or who's got the mic? Oh, yeah.
What the heck? When you're talking
real close.
When you were talking about people to admire, I couldn't help but think of an old movie that I recently saw again, Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, if there was a good person who just did everything right, he was it.
Truth, justice, and the American way.
In the American way. I'm not so sure about the American way.
Yeah, well, that's
certainly truth and justice.
Yeah. We're inspired by those ideals, and then there's the truth, and you know, and so, but we But when we're inspired by an ideal, okay, even, you know, having those imagined heroes, they, you know, I was a big Superman fan, yeah. And we have to find people who that we can identify with that inspire us, you know. So for some, Superman wouldn't do it, but Martin Luther King would. Okay, anything else? All right, so we'll close. I'll just read this this passage that I love from Nyosho Kempo, the great Tibetan master. We're not practicing for ourselves alone. Since everyone is involved and included in the great scope of this perfectly pure motivation to benefit others, whatever else we might do is secondary to that. If we cultivate this good heart, this altruistic, unselfish attitude, then all strife and struggle will naturally be pacified, purified, transformed in us, and become beneficial to others through contact with this good heart, which we, the bodhisattvas, strive to embody. So let that be a practice. When there is an impulse to express your caring, don't hold back, you know, and notice how good it feels. You know, not to stretch yourself beyond your limits. You don't want to be a martyr, and you want to include yourself in your compassion for others. But don't be shy about expressing your goodness. It feels good, and it awakens it in others. And I think I'm saying this, I'm sure we all know this. This is just kind of reminding myself and reminding all of us, just love goodness. That's what it comes down to for me. Just let yourself more and more love the good inside and around you. And then appreciate and wish yourself well. All of those qualities that life has gifted you with, don't miss them. And may our time here together help awaken all the good inside of us, all of us, and may it radiate out and be of benefit to all beings everywhere. May all see their true nature and share their love well. May all know the highest happiness and peace. Thank you very much. Have a good evening, and see you in a couple of months. Keep on coming here, though. Next week, Ajahn Chandoko, really fine teacher.